This episode may contain content of a graphic nature, including descriptions of physical and sexual violence against adults, children, and animals. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, everyone. I'm Tanya.
And I'm Talia.
And we are Crimes and Consequences, a true crime podcast. Hi, Talia.
Hi, Tanya.
How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. Fantastic. On May 31st, 1997, college student Lance Butler was driving with a friend on Highway 6 near Golden, Colorado. Lance and his buddy were heading to Central City to enjoy some gambling and a few beers. His friend was visiting from out of town, and Lance was eager to show his friend Colorado's natural beauty. Lance decided to take the scenic route through the mountains to show his friend the beautiful landscape. It was a clear, sunny day, and Lance's friend noticed the rushing waters of Clear Creek that ran along the highway. He said that they should pull over and dip their feet in the creek.
Why not?
Why not? And that's exactly what Lance thought. Why not? He told his friend, "It's going to be cold, though," but he was cool with it. Lance pulled the car into a gravel turnoff at mile marker 296.5, and the guys got out and stretched their legs. They walked over to a narrow stretch of grass and noticed just up ahead, the ground took a sudden drop about 30 feet to the stream below.
So it's like a cliff?
Mm-hmm. Lance and his friend looked over the embankment to see a steep clutter of jagged boulders, way too steep and rough to be able to climb down. Lance's friend walked along the edge looking for another avenue for them to get down to the water when he suddenly stopped. He pointed and said, "There's a body down there."
Oh, shit.
I know. I want this to happen to me.
I was just thinking.
I know. It's sick, but... Lance initially thought that his friend was joking and he looked in the direction that he was pointing. Sure enough, though, his eye caught the blue jeans of what looked to him to be a small man with no shirt. The body was almost at the edge of where the water began, jammed in between some rocks. Lance and his friend walked along the edge to get a better look.
Yeah, see, they didn't run away.
No, they didn't run away. They're like, I gotta check this out. Exactly what I would do. When they got to where they were directly above the body, they discussed what they should do next. Noticing a pool of congealed blood a couple feet in diameter on the grass where they were standing, Lance's friend decided, okay, this is time for us to call 911.
Yeah, it's time to get the fuck out of here when that blood's that close.
Right. They tried to wave someone down along the highway to help, and eventually someone stopped, but their cell phone wouldn't get a signal. I mean, it's 1997. More people stopped, and no one could get a signal. They're in the mountains, basically. And some people just stopped to gawk.
I can't judge them. I would too. I do podcasts on true crime. I need to investigate.
I need to see what's happening. This might be a story. And it is. They all decided to leave the spot eventually. And Lance called to a few people, you know, try to get a signal and call the police. Jefferson County Sheriff's Dispatch soon received several calls to report a body along Highway 6 marker 296.5. Deputy Diane Obima was the first to arrive on the scene and immediately saw the body when she walked to the edge of the canyon. Deputy Obima carefully made her way down. She braved, going down the rocks where the boys didn't, inching her way closer to the body. When she came upon the body, she noticed it wasn't a man at all. The body belonged to a young girl who was obviously beyond medical help. She was laying on her back, her eyes closed. Her head was nearly in the water, and her feet pointed toward the canyon walls. She had silver handcuffs around her wrists, restraining her arms behind her back, and her body was just covered in blood. Deputy Obima glanced up the hill and noticed a path of blood that began partly down the slope and continued down rocks and plants and gravel until it came to the body. Deputy Obima was shocked at the amount of blood along the path. Some of it had soaked into the ground. The girl hadn't died where the pool of blood was up at the top, but right here where she had fought to live. From the path of blood, Deputy Obima saw it was clear that the girl tried to climb up the embankment only to fall several times before finally landing where she was found.
Oh my God, that's so fucking sad.
I know.
Oh man.
This poor thing.
Oh God, you're trying to climb up and you just can't make it.
And she's bleeding and she's bleeding. Deputy Obima made her way back to her squad car and she called it in. She was soon joined by crime scene investigators and Detective Alan Simmons, who would be the lead detective on this homicide. They watched as the young girl's body was put into a body bag and taken to the medical examiner's office for autopsy. Detective Simmons was present when the autopsy was performed. The unknown girl was tiny, only 5 feet, weighing only about 100 pounds, and was a very young teenager. She had a bruise on the side of her face, probably caused by someone punching her, another large bruise on her chest, and several smaller ones all over her arms and legs, indicating she had put up a fight. She had been stabbed 28 times with a single-edged knife to her chest, back, and neck. Her carotid artery and jugular vein had been pierced.
Yet she still was able to climb
mm-hmm.
a few feet.
Exactly. Her cause of death was bleeding to death.
Extinguation?
Yes.
I said it 20 times in that one episode.
I know. The last day of her life was hell. The medical examiner found that besides the brutal stabbing she experienced, there was a bite mark on her left breast. Her anus and rectum were badly bruised, and they both had also been purposely sliced open by a very sharp blade.
Sliced open.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God!
I know, this poor child.
God, it's just so horrible.
I know.
I'm just, wow.
Evil people are out there. It would be another day before the girl was identified. Her name was Brandaline Rose Duval, who everyone called Brandy. Brandy was a 14-year-old middle school student. Brandy was an honor roll student and was active in sports at school. She had disappeared on May 30th, and her mother last saw her that night around 6 p.m. They had met on a street corner so her mom, Angela, could give her some spending money for the weekend, which Brandy needed because she was staying with her grandmother. Angela and Brandy were more like best friends than mother and daughter. And Brandy was very independent and street smart. She knew the public bus system in downtown Denver and also knew how to take care of herself. Her mom just described her as being really independent. Before Angela drove away, Brandy reached into her car and gave her mom a hug. Brandy and Angela told each other that they loved one another, and that was the last time Angela saw her daughter alive. The next time she would see her is when she went to the coroner's office to identify her body. After Brandy didn't arrive to her grandmother's the evening of May 30th and hadn't called, which was highly unusual for Brandy, Angela grew very worried. After she saw an article describing the girl who was found in Clear Creek, she called the Jefferson County coroner. When she arrived to the medical examiner's office, they first showed her a small plastic bag that had a ring with the letter B on it. Angela immediately recognized the ring. Brandy never took it off. The fear inside of Angela just grew, and the anxiety, as you can imagine. They took her to another room where she was asked to look through a glass partition. She watched a body bag being unzipped, and her precious daughter, her best friend's face, was revealed. Angela screamed inside her head, "Baby, wake up, wake up!" Feeling like this all had to be a mistake, but Brandy would never wake up again. The night she was killed, after getting money from Angela, Brandy then spent the next few hours with one of her best friends, Patrice. Patrice and Brandy had smoked weed that night and drank most of a six-pack of beer that a guy they had met at a bus stop had bought for them.
That's not good. That's something I would have done when I was 14.
You know, his payment was just one of the beers.
Wow.
Brandy had left Patrice's a little after 11:30 p.m., and made her way to a bus stop on South Federal Boulevard, heading to Grandma's.
She's walking to a bus stop, not afraid.
Not afraid.
11:30.
I know. Wow. She didn't even need to ride the bus. She could have called a family member for a ride. Her mom said, you know, she could always call me or her stepdad, or someone would have picked her up. But
she was
independent.
Stoned.
Yeah, she was stoned, probably.
And independent and drunk on beer.
Exactly. So she decided to ride the bus. She was last seen wearing a red Chicago Bulls basketball jersey, because she absolutely adored Michael Jordan. Black shorts and red, black, and white Nike tennis shoes. Definitely not the clothes that she was wearing when her body was found. After police talked to Patrice and got these details to retrace Brandy's whereabouts the night she was killed, they still had many hours unaccounted for. They hoped that maybe someone at the bus stop had seen her. The stop at South Federal Boulevard was a busy one, even late at night. There was always a lot of teenagers around, many of them homeless, on every street corner and in nearby parking lots. Saturday nights are even busier, and this was a Saturday night. Gang members and people in their lowriders.
Oh boy.
They would cruise up and down South Federal Boulevard. Despite the hustle and bustle, though, found on that very busy street, no one seemed to have seen Brandy the night of May 30th. Police had no leads to go on and were afraid Brandy's case would grow cold. On June 10th, however, everything changed. Detective Simmons received a call that would break the case wide open and reveal the absolute horror that Brandy suffered in the last hours of life. On June 10th, Detective Simmons received a call from a man named Jose Martinez, who told the detectives that Brandy had been at his home on the night of May 30th, and that she had been raped by members of the Crenshaw Mafia Gangster Bloods gang, the Bloods. Detective Simmons and his partner, Detective Ralph Gallegos, visited Jose at the home he rented. The house, they would learn, had unspeakable horrors committed inside of it.
Why did he wait to call the police 2 weeks later? Why not it's happening?
Because he said he was afraid.
Okay.
I know. The house was a small ranch-style home, only about 1,000 square feet. The unkept yard was encased in a chain-link fence and surrounded by a yard with weeds, trash, and car parts. During the conversation, Jose, who I'll refer to as Uncle Joe, confessed that he had been an unwilling witness to Brandy's rape and torture. She had been brought to his house by a member of the Bloods gang that he knew as Baby G. Baby G was 22-year-old David Warren, and when he got to Uncle Joe's house, he also brought four other people with him that Uncle Joe didn't know. He told investigators that when Baby G arrived, there was already a party going on. His nephew, Daniel Martinez, who everyone called Bang.
Bang.
Bang, and he was 27. There was 25-year-old Francisco Pancho Martinez, no relation. 16-year-old Frank Little Bang Virgil Jr.
Lil Bang.
And Bang's first cousin, I know, because I'm going to refer to them by their gang names. And Bang's first cousin, Samuel Zigzag Quintana.
Just so I'm clear, they were already partying
when
somebody showed up with her?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the four that were already partying were Bang, who is Uncle Joe's nephew, Pancho, Little Bang, and Zigzag. Okay?
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Okay. They all belonged to a Latino offshoot of the Bloods gang who called themselves Deuce 7 and just raised hell all over Denver. Members of Deuce 7, they dealt drugs, they did drive-by shootings, they just spent a lot of time, like I said, raising hell and intimidating people. They're badasses. Nobody wanted to fuck with them.
A bunch of assholes.
Yes. The leaders of Deuce 7 were Bang and his brother, Boom, who is named Antonio.
Oh my God, this is almost too much with these nicknames, Tanya.
I know. Bang and Boom. Pancho was near the top of the hierarchy, but not on the top tier with Bang and Boom. I know.
It's going to be hard to go through this little thing.
Bang and Boom.
And Little Bang.
Little Bang. Little Bang and Zigzag were members, not near the top, but Little Bang was special to Bang. As the nickname implies, that's why they started calling him Little Bang.
Yeah, I can't wait to be in Big Bang. I know.
Do seven members identified themselves by wearing the color red and considered it to be a great insult for non-members to wear the colors. They patrolled streets like South Federal Boulevard on the lookout for non-members wearing that color. On May 30th, they noticed Brandy wearing her Chicago Bulls jersey, and they pulled up alongside of her at the bus stop where they exchanged words. No one knows exactly what possessed Brandy to get in their car, but she did and was soon taken to Uncle Joe's house. So no one knows if she was forced or if she went willingly. Uncle Joe told the detectives that the gang members, quote, had the devil in them that night, and he hadn't been able to stop them from what they did to Brandy. She was alive when they took her from the house, and she was begging for them to take her to the hospital. I'm going to kind of like tell you the end before I tell you what happened, because just to let you know, police eventually arrest Pancho, Little Bang, Baby G, Zigzag, and Bang after Uncle Joe identified them in a photo lineup. Uncle Joe also agreed to testify in the eventual trials in exchange for him not being arrested for his actions that night, namely destroying evidence and probably accessory after the fact, because he knew what was happening.
And he destroyed evidence?
Yes, he helped them clean up. Two other gang members, Maurice Warren, who everyone called Trap, and he was Baby G's brother, and 19-year-old Jacob Smiley Casado, were also added to the list of suspects when police got another tip from an informant on June 15th that they were in the car with Baby G and had picked Brandy up from the bus stop. So even though there was five guys in the car, I know about Baby G, Smiley, and Maurice. That's who was arrested. All of them would eventually be charged with variations on 10 different felonies, including first-degree murder, first-degree sexual assault on a child, and second-degree kidnapping. Police had quite the job ahead of them. They had their suspects, but they didn't know exactly what happened to Brandy after leaving Uncle Joe's house. So everyone's arrested. They're all going to be charged with this. And some of them started to think about, well, shit, I'm kind of in a bad way. So Zigzag was the one that cracked first, and he started talking to police.
He needs to get that plea deal.
Exactly, because this is what he did. He had not only been facing first-degree murder charges for Brandy's death, but also he was being charged in an unrelated murder from 1996 of a 19-year-old woman. Zigzag pleaded the charges down in exchange for his testimony to two second-degree murder charges, which carried a maximum of 48 years each, and the death penalty was taken off the table. Zigzag wasn't the only snitch, though. Baby G and Trap, the brothers, took plea deals and were charged with first-degree sexual assault. Smiley also took a plea, and they agreed to testify against Pancho, Bang, and Little Bang. As I mentioned before, no one knows exactly why Brandy got in the car with the new seven members that night of May 30th. However, when she arrived at the house, Trap had his arm around her shoulder and was bringing her into the house, and Baby G came through the door before everyone carrying a box of booze, telling all the guys there who would listen that they brought a girl with them who was, quote, down to have sex, unquote, with everyone there in exchange for some cocaine. When Trap came into the house, there were two other girls already there. One was Pancho's girlfriend and the other was Bang's girlfriend. They were both getting high with Uncle Joe.
Did they have cool nicknames?
No. I wish. When Brandy got there, no one introduced her or offered her a beer. They just kind of acted like she wasn't human. She seemed to already be intoxicated, either on booze or something else, and just kept her head down. She was immediately taken to the bathroom of the house and was given cocaine by Zigzag, and Pancho took off her clothes and carried her into one of the back bedrooms. Earlier that night, Antonio had been there, boom, but he left earlier, sometime around 11. But I just want to note he was there. Once Brandy was in one of the bedrooms with Pancho, he was joined by Baby G, and they raped Brandy with a beer bottle.
The beer bottle.
This poor child. Afterward, Bang took Brandy into the bathroom again, and that's when he sliced her anus open with a knife so he could more easily have anal sex with her.
What?
Mm-hmm, that's why he did it.
Oh my gosh, that is so brutal.
I know, this is one of the sickest things I've ever heard. Bang took her into the bedroom again, and Pancho decided he was going to just humiliate her and hurt her some more. He found a broom of Uncle Joe's, and he very forcefully rammed it into her rectum as Bang held Brandy down and watched, and they both just laughed hysterically at this. This caused Brandy to lose control of her bowels, and when that happened, some feces got on Bang's shoes. When Pancho saw that, he said to her, "You shit on my homeboy's shoes, bitch," and kicked her in the chest as hard as he could, like he was kicking a football. When Brandy protested or said something to him, Pancho kicked her again, this time in the head, yelling, "Shut up, bitch." He then took Brandy to the shower, rinsed her off, and proceeded to rape her again.
The amount of depravity demonstrated by these punks is just shocking.
I know.
I'm, like,
I just can't believe
it right now.
And I wondered, as you probably are, where's Uncle Joe when all this is happening? This
Where is
his
Uncle
house,
Joe?
Right? He had gone to bed earlier that evening in his son's bedroom, and one of his granddaughters was also sleeping over. And I want to say his son was probably around 10 and his granddaughter was probably 5-ish. When he went to bed, he went to sleep in his son's room because he said he had done his laundry and it was on his bed, like neatly folded and ready to be put away in the morning. Laying in his son's room, he heard some commotion. He was like, "What the hell's going on?" And he peeked out the bedroom door to see what was happening. That's when Pancho comes up to the door and asks him, "Hey, Uncle Joe, you want some head?" Uncle Joe's like, "No." Because he thinks Brandy is there willingly.
That's right.
He glanced toward his bedroom and he sees that it's dark. He thinks maybe that they're initiating someone into the gang that night, which they were. On top of everything, they were initiating Smiley that night. Uncle Joe walked over to his bedroom and he turns on the light. He's like, "What the hell's going on in here?" When he turns it on, he sees that Brandy is giving oral sex to Zigzag. She was laying on her back on the mattress and Bang was on top of her having sex. Pancho was standing to the side of the bed. Since they were in Uncle Joe's room, he sees that all his nicely folded clothes are just scattered all over the room, and this is actually what sets him off.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Blood was everywhere. On his clothes, on the sheets, on the mattress.
Probably feces, too.
Probably. Uncle Joe initially didn't think anything was wrong with what was happening. He assumed, like I said, she was there willingly, giving everyone freebies, and the blood was just because maybe she was on her period. Pancho said, "My turn," and he moved to where Zigzag had been, and Brandy was giving him oral sex. Bang got up from her and was just covered in blood. Uncle Joe said his whole front was just full of blood. This is when Uncle Joe figures, this girl's not here willingly.
There's just too much blood.
There's just too much blood. He gets pissed and he tells all of them to leave, but no one acts like they can hear anything. Uncle Joe ends up just going back to his room, kind of like sticking his fingers in his ears and pretending like nothing's going on. Pancho was in the bedroom and he picked up Brandy's body and body slammed her onto the mattress as hard as he could. I don't know why he did this.
Where was her body before that?
On the bed.
Oh,
yeah. I don't know why he's doing this to her. Bang was there and he forced Brandy on her hands and knees. Baby G moved in front of her and tried to force her to blow him. Another gang member moved behind her and said, quote, "Somebody fucked her up," end quote. Brandy's anus was bleeding, swollen, and the size of a grapefruit at this point.
Oh my God. But seriously.
I know.
Oh my God.
This didn't stop Bang, though. He got behind her and had sex with her, although it's not clear if it was anal or vaginal sex. At some point, Bang took a shower, and after he got out, he and Pancho took Brandy into the bathroom again, where Bang sat on the toilet and Brandy was forced to give him oral sex. Pancho watched with a toilet plunger in his hands. No one knows for sure whether the toilet plunger was used on her. I want to think it wasn't, but it probably was. When they were through, Bang took a nude Brandy into the living room and put the metal handcuffs on her that he had found in the house. As Brandy is sitting in the living room nude, Poncho Bang and Little Bang are trying to figure out what they're going to do with her. She had been begging them to take her to the hospital, but they know they can't do that. She's seen their faces. Once in the living room, Bang shoves her to the ground, and again, she begs them, just please take me to the hospital. Poncho instead decides to kick her as hard as he can in the back of her head to shut her up. Little Bang then asks Brandy if she knows where she is. They're testing her to see if she will be able to identify them, and Brandy doesn't know it, but her answer seals her death sentence. Brandy replies that they're at 60th and Federal. He knew exactly where they were. So it's a test that she passed, but she failed. After she says this, Little Bang tells everyone they're going to have to kill her now. He said it loud enough for Brandy to hear. They stood her up and put a pair of Uncle Joe's jeans on her, along with Danny's hoodie sweatshirt. They put the sweatshirt on her backwards so the hood could be pulled up around her face and she couldn't see. She was struggling and begging for them to just let her go. But instead, Little Bang punched her on the side of the face as hard as he could and said, "Shut up, bitch." Before Brandy was dragged from the house, Zigzag got a knife from Uncle Joe's kitchen and also took some wires from a video game system with him. Danny, Poncho, Zigzag, Little Bang, and Baby G all forced Brandy into Zigzag's car. But before I tell you what happens next, we're going to take a break. Uncle Joe claimed he tried to stop them. Maybe he did. He said he never called the police because even though Bang was his nephew, he was still afraid of the gang. As a matter of fact, he was put in witness protection before he testified. Before the gang left the house with Brandy, Uncle Joe claims he told Bang to take Brandy to the hospital or drop her off at home and not hurt her any further. Bang said he would, and he left with the others. Brandy rode in the back seat, face covered, and her arms handcuffed behind her back. As they drove into the Colorado mountains, Brandy again continued to beg for her life and promised she wouldn't say anything to the police. They would just please take her to the hospital. Poncho grew angry at Brandy's pleas for her life and, tired of hearing her beg, he got the knife that Zigzag had grabbed and stabbed her numerous times in the belly. Zigzag told him to stop because he's going to get blood on the seats. And Poncho stopped stabbing her. He next started to choke her and strangle her with all his might. When they stopped the car, Poncho dragged a bleeding Brandy from the car. Zigzag held her down while Poncho stabbed her some more, this time in the chest and neck. Believing she was dead, or not caring whether she was, they flung Brandy's brutalized body over the side of the canyon to the creek below. Then they drove away. As we know, though, Brandy wasn't dead. Despite being stabbed over 20 times and her arms handcuffed behind her, she got up and stumbled several times and tried to climb up the wall of the canyon to get help on the road above. I mentioned she eventually died from blood loss. After dumping Brandy, the Deuce 7 members went back to Uncle Joe's house to try and clean up. Poncho took the bloodstained mattress out of the house to get rid of that evidence. And even though they did a pretty decent job, Uncle Joe kept something of Brandy's, which he gave to investigators when they first came to interview him about her murder. It was a prayer card with her name on it. It said, quote, "See, I will not forget you. I have carved you in the palm of my hand," end quote. Uncle Joe said he kept it for two reasons. One was he thought it was pretty. And number two was that if he ever had to show police, like, that Brandy was really there, he could produce this prayer card. After killing Brandy, the gang members went to Poncho's girlfriend's house. Mind you, he's married too, but he also has a girlfriend. Around dawn to clean up. They washed up in her kitchen sink. Later, when Pancho took a nap, she washed his clothes and noticed dried blood on his pants and shoes. Bang went on the run and wasn't arrested until December 30th, 1997, so a good 6 months he was on the run. He had relatives in the Trinidad area, which is about 3 hours from Denver, and on the day he was arrested, a detective was driving through a grocery store parking lot when he saw a car matching the description of Bang's relative's car. He thought he saw someone that looked like Bang, or was him, in the backseat. The detective went back to his station for backup, and when they came back to the parking lot, the car was empty, so they waited. They saw their suspect a few times, but they still weren't sure if he was Bang or not. What they were trying to see was if he had a tattoo of the name Teresa on his neck, because Bang had the name Teresa on his neck. She was the mother of at least one of his children.
Well, isn't that fucking sweet?
I know. Finally, when they watched their suspect go to the car and get in, they decided, okay, we're just going to have to arrest him. They identified themselves as cops and told him to get out of the car. Danny protested, as did the woman who had been with him, but the detective was smart. And fearing that Danny would be a flight risk, I mean, obviously, right? He asked, why are you making such a fuss over a shoplifting arrest?
Oh.
At that, Danny relaxed and allowed himself to be cuffed.
That was really clever.
It was really clever. It was fast thinking on his part. Once they got him to the police station, they were finally able to get a good look at his neck. And sure as shit, they saw the Teresa tattoo. After all seven members that I've told you about of Deuce 7 were arrested for this disgustingly brutal torture and murder, the state of Colorado had grown hardened against violent crimes. Not too soon before Brandy was murdered, Columbine had just happened. And the state of Colorado hadn't executed anyone in about 30 years. But 5 months after Brandy's murder, they executed Gary Lee Davis, who was a convicted rapist and murderer, by lethal injection. Now Bang and Pancho were facing the same fate. Colorado only had 5 inmates on death row.
What?
When their trial began. I know. But prosecutors went balls out and hoped for death sentences for both of them. Colorado had recently changed its law, and instead of having a jury decide the sentence in a death penalty case, a panel of 3 judges would vote on the appropriate penalty. And this becomes important later. Frank Virgil Jr., or Little Bang, who was the youngest of all the accused at 16 years old when he was arrested, was too young to face execution in Colorado. So the court sentenced him to life without parole. He is currently incarcerated at the Arkansas Valley Correctional Facility in Ordway, Colorado, which is funny, they name it Arkansas. Jacob Smiley Casados pled guilty to sexual assault in exchange for the murder charges against him being dropped, and he was sentenced to 20 years in prison.
20 years.
All for being in the gang less than a day, because he was the one that was being initiated that night. Both Maurice and David Warren, and that was Trap and Baby G, they also made plea deals and received prison sentences ranging from 10 to 15 years.
10 to 15 years, that's mm-hmm. it?
That's it. They didn't get charged with any murder charges. It was sexual assault charges. All 3 of these men have since been released.
Oh my God.
Right.
Stop it. I'm so pissed. Just stop. I'm so angry. Colorado, come on, man.
I know. I just... Sammy Zigzag Quintana, as I mentioned, agreed to testify against Pancho and Bang, and he was sentenced to 2 second-degree murder charges for a total of 96 years. He goes by the name Sonny Tafoya.
What?
Now, in an article I read said he's at an out-of-state prison. However, my best friend Google says a 44-year-old man named Sonny Tafoya is incarcerated in Colorado for crimes he was convicted of in 1999. So it sounds like it could be him.
Oh, yeah.
He's the right age and the right year of being convicted. I don't know why he would have changed his name. Maybe he's afraid of getting jumped in prison. For being a snitch?
Yeah, he snitched on fellow gang members, Tanya.
I know. But it's all you gotta do is Google it. It's right there. Francisco Pancho Martinez and Danny Bang Martinez, again, no relation, were next up for trial, and this time they both faced the death penalty. Pancho's trial finally began in August of 1998. Throughout the trial, he was arrogant, cocky, and rude, and showed not a shred of remorse for his actions. He mouthed the word "fuck you" to Brandy's grieving family as he smirked and laughed. And actually, on the very first day of his trial, during a break, when the judge and jury had left the courtroom, as Brandy's family turned to leave, he smirked and nodded his head at each of them. One of the prosecutors was extremely angry over this behavior and calls to one of the deputies, like, look at what this guy's doing. Pancho says to the prosecutor, "Fuck you, you fucking pussy." He then turns to the female member of the prosecution team and says to her, "And fuck you too, bitch." The judge was told of this unacceptable behavior and said he's going to have to be present in the courtroom until Pancho is led out of the room every day. And if there's any more incidents like this, Pancho won't be allowed to attend his own trial. He didn't do anything else after that.
As we sit here being two attorneys, can you imagine he's your client?
No. I've had clients not follow my advice or do stupid shit in court, and I just want to kill them.
This is way whole different level than I'm used to.
No. And having to defend someone's bad behavior like that, good luck. No. During Pancho's trial, his defense team tried to shift the blame to Bang, but the jury wasn't convinced. They took less than 3 hours to find him guilty of first-degree murder, first-degree sexual assault, second-degree kidnapping, sexual assault on a child, and a few other charges. After the verdict, Brandy's mom, Angela, was interviewed. She said she had mixed feelings about whether Pancho should be sentenced to death. She said, quote, "I don't really care as long as he can't hurt anybody else. No parent should have to go through what we went through," end quote. Pancho's fate was left in the hands of the 3-panel jury that consisted of the judges. The panel noted that even for a gang member, Pancho went above and beyond the scale of barbarity that any of them had seen. It didn't take long for the 3 judges to reach a verdict. On May 27th, 1999, Francisco Pancho Martinez was sentenced to death by lethal injection for Brandy's murder. The judges said in their opinion, quote, "In nearly 50 years of collective judicial experience, this panel has never dealt with a more shocking display of conscienceless depravity than that of this defendant," end quote. It's pretty heavy. That same day, Danny Bang Martinez was sentenced. He very narrowly escaped the death penalty by a single vote and was sentenced to life without parole for his role in the torture and murder of Brandy Duvall. He is currently serving his life sentence out of state as part of an interstate prisoner compact arranged with the Colorado Department of Corrections. At the same time that Pancho sat on Colorado's death row, another death row inmate in Arizona named Timothy Ring had also been sentenced to death by a 3-judge panel. While on death row, Timothy filed a lawsuit against the state of Arizona, essentially arguing that his death sentence was a violation of his 6th Amendment rights to a fair trial. In his lawsuit, he said that his sentence should have been decided by a jury and not judges. The case went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, which, in a 7-2 decision, held that it was in violation of the Constitution for a judge without a jury to impose death sentences on convicts. Back in Colorado, Pancho and another death row inmate had also been sentenced to death by the 3-judge panel. They appealed their cases to the Colorado Supreme Court.
Do you know who one of the death row inmates is?
Who was it?
Wild Bill Cody.
It was?
Yes. He was on death row at the time, and that got overturned.
Yes. Both he and Pancho's death sentences got overturned. In February 2003, Pancho's sentence was commuted to life in prison without parole. For Brandy's mom, Angela, the commutation of Pancho's death sentence brought another wave of devastation to her family. She said, quote, "They let me down. They let Brandy down," end quote. And she cried to a news reporter who interviewed her afterward. "It makes it like it was a waste of time," she said. "It makes it like he got away with it." Angela was determined not to let Brandy's name fade into an obscure case mentioned in law textbooks. She wanted people to remember Brandy as a real person. After Brandy's death, Angela spoke about her daughter as much as she could. Later, she commented that the only good thing she felt about testifying in the murder trial, because she had to testify in 3 different murder trials. The only good thing was that she could talk about Brandy's life before it was cut short by the actions of a group of extremely sick and deranged murderers. Angela, whose life had been torn apart by grief and depression, died 5 years after the sentences were overturned from cancer at age 51. I mentioned just for a second about Antonio Boom Martinez.
Boom.
He was Bang's brother. He was also part of the Deuce 7, and he had been at Uncle Joe's that night, but he had left early before Brandy had showed up.
Wouldn't that actually make it Deuce 8? Because 7 of them got arrested.
They were actually named after like an address. They had lived on a street that was 2727, whatever. He managed to escape the gang life. The reason why he left early that night, he said, is he had gone there just to visit.
He's the one that left at around 11, right?
Yes, he was the one that left around 11. And he said the guys seemed determined to get shit-faced. And Antonio just wasn't into it anymore, and that's why he left. He had been struggling with the fact that he didn't fit in with that world anymore. He had worked really hard to get his life together. He was a tattoo artist in California at the time of Brandy's murder. He sometimes has guilty thoughts about that night, thinking that maybe if he had stayed, he might have been able to stop the gang rape of Brandy and her eventual murder. But he also says maybe he would have helped clean up and hide the crime.
And somehow gotten wrapped up and ruined his whole life.
He's conflicted. But he says of that night, quote, "To tell you the truth, I think they wanted to get caught. I think they were tired. They knew they weren't going anywhere," end quote.
Well, there are other ways to get caught. You don't have to do that.
Honestly, right?
It's a bit extreme.
Mm-hmm. Today, the creek in the mountains where Brandy Duvall bled to death is marked by a steel cross. Erected by her family, the cross bears Brandy's name and is decorated with colorful necklaces, flowers, and stuffed animals. After her death, Brandy's boyfriend, who had given her a rose just before she died, and it was the first rose she had ever gotten from a boy, wrote a poem to remember her and the happy times they spent together. It said, "Not a day goes by that I don't think of you. I sometimes wonder what would have been if you were still here with me. Then I'm taken away to days long forgotten, the days when you were here. The days when we would chase each other around the yard as lovesick children do. The night ride trips up the mountains, how we would sit in the back seat the entire time and watch the stars. I can't help but smile when I think of those times, but I cry as I write them now," end quote.
Weren't they just like 14?
I know. Pretty heavy for a 14-year-old.
That's more than I do with my husband.
I've never written my husband a poem.
Wow.
I know. Bless his little heart. So that is my story of the brutal murder and torture of Brandy Duvall. I need to mention the source where I got most of my information was a book by Steve Jackson.
I love that author.
He wrote a book called No Angels, The Short Life and Brutal Death of Brandeline Rose Duvall. And there's so much more than I mentioned in this podcast. So if you're interested in the story a lot, go get it.
Okay. That was really hard to listen to. Like, really hard. That's a 10 on a gruesome scale.
Yeah, that was a bad one. Well, thank you, Talia, for listening.
You're so welcome.
And thank you, listeners, for listening to this week's episode. And if you'd like more information about Brandy or this case or other episodes, please go to our website, tntcrimes.com. If you were interested in becoming a member and getting lots of extra cases.
Ad-free.
Ad-free. Early release.
Nobody wants to listen to commercials anymore.
No, come on, join us. Please visit patreon.com/TNTcrimes, or you can find out more information on our website. We're also on social media, on Instagram and Facebook, @HardcoreTrueCrime.
This was definitely a hardcore true crime case.
Yeah, this one was bad. Before we go, don't forget to hit the subscribe/follow button on whatever app you're listening to us on if you haven't already. And we've got some shout outs.
Yes, we do.
All right, Talia, I'm going to save my applause until you're done.
I'm going to do the shout outs because I think I can pronounce their names. Are you ready?
I am ready.
To our new members, Mary, Melissa, Vanessa, Laura, Andrea, Valerie, Frank Grimes, Natasha, Carrie, Jason, Jennifer, Emma, Layton, Brittany, Stephanie, Terry, Lucia or Lucia. Either way, thank
either
you.
Way.
Brian, Lynn, Joanne, Rihanna, Stephen, Becky, Ace, Dawn, Corey, Sandra or Sandra, whatever she prefers, Adam, Nicole, Cheryl, Christy, Debbie, Jennifer. And did I say Stephanie?
Because if yes.
Okay, well, I'm going to say it again.
And Stephanie.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Round of applause for them.
Welcome our new members. Is that everything?
That's all I got.
All right, then until our next episode.
Don't kill each other.
Bye.